Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
And Rich Hudson.
Hello.
And E3 hype is upon us, but before we get to all the different things that we've prepared to talk about for the next couple of weeks' event, let's just talk about Modern Warfare, because that reveal just dropped last night, and we have many things to say. We were talking about it before recording, but what are your initial thoughts so far?
So I think I'm very much like you guys on this. I was very Call of Duty to me is meant to be 90s rogue military fiction, Michael Bay-esque spectacle. It's meant to be really like just stupid and over
the
top and very action oriented, and obviously it's still going to be that, but the vibe I got from this trailer was very much we're going to just do no Russian the entire game and try and make a statement, and I have no confidence in that team to make the statement that they think they might be making with that, because you've got terrorist attacks in Piccadilly. They've got literally their own version of the white helmets from Syria there, chemical attacks.
Because they have, yeah. I mean, Rich obviously will get to you and stuff. They've touted this as a reimagining of the original sort of Modern Warfare, and they seem to just be kind of picking and choosing different things that represent what Modern Warfare once represented last decade. But they've invented a fictional Middle Eastern country, haven't
they? Yeah. So it's meant to be a stand-in for Syria. So in the first Modern Warfare, when you invade, it's meant to be like an unnamed Middle Eastern country, but it's very much an analogue of Iran.
Right.
And they're doing the same thing with this one, except it's very clearly Syria. Like, you have footage of the White Helmets, who are a real group in Syria who rescue people kind of getting stuck in bombings and stuff. Then you have the image of the chemical attack, which obviously will conjure images of Assad's attacks in Syria from like a few years back. So it's definitely leaning more into those real world elements. But to me, no one played Call of Duty for those
that's
sorts,
the
that
other
sort
things.
Of that sort of grittiness. I mean, the closest you got to gritty in Call of Duty was at the end of World War II, which had a very poignant, very powerful representation of the aftermath of the Second World War, and I thought that was actually really interesting. But going the approach of, thank you for reminding me, 6 days in Fallujah approach, that could lead to a lot of controversy, especially since 6 days in Fallujah didn't even release.
Well, the thing that, like, because they've sort of got this whole thing where if you read the people who have seen the different, I think there's been hands on with some code so far or whatever. There's a write up of the story as it seems so far, and you do have half the game where you're playing as, like, you know, the standard soldiers from the original games, and they also have this whole like rebel freedom fighter faction, and they want you to play as this other character called Farah, who's like a young child, and her house gets stormed by these Russian soldiers, and then she has to grab a screwdriver to kill a soldier. You sort of do a stealth sequence about 5 or 6 times to get enough hits on this guy to kill him, and then you go out in front and you kill more soldiers, and you're like, you get used to killing.
Sounds like the boss. It sounds like the David.
It is like,
yeah,
or like a Metal Gear 4 boss or something.
Yeah, because the way the writer framed it was if it was a prequel, which makes you think of the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. And it's like, well, are you two? It's weird. It's like they're trying to. It's almost like Ubisoft syndrome, if you think about it. It's like, our games aren't political. Well, obviously setting them in a political context. So you've got an analogue for Afghanistan potentially here with the Russian invasion, but they're not calling it. I mean, if you've got,
if you've got the inevitable voice line in a loading screen from the President of the United States at the time, it's going to be some horrendous Trump caricature.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the reason they've done this is because they got sued for all the, was it Noriega stuff from Black Ops?
Maybe, if they're just like, let's do a rock star and just have like fake names for everything. And we can
but it's very
it
weird. It's like trying to have their cake and eat it, basically. It's like they can't decide whether they want it to be full gung-ho badass, which is what it really should be. I don't think anyone's playing Call of Duty.
But I like the sort of taking it a little bit more seriously than before, whereas whereas like in the Black Ops game specifically, we've had all the dumb like emotes and all this sort of brightly coloured. I mean, I say brightly coloured, that's not always a bad thing in terms of like the map design, but just like generally they kind of make it a bit too lighthearted in my opinion. That's
why they had a lot of
stuck with me so much.
Yeah, a lot of that, like, it's for the kids. Here's your,
but
you know.
Honest, overall, I'm quite excited to see where they go.
I'm definitely going to play. I'm definitely pop for seeing Captain Price. Like, I'm here. He's such a good character.
I mean, it makes perfect sense for Activision to do this because it's going to have the draw again because people are having those proper vibe flashbacks to 2007.
Yeah, we do sound a little bit negative on it, but I think it's worth balancing those things out because there is a lot to look forward to.
We're
going to
be critical as anything.
Yeah, of course. So we all picked five different things for the upcoming E3 that we are excited for. Either it's a game or it's an announcement, just wish fulfillment, whatever. Everything goes. So we don't have any repeats. We all have different things.
Yeah.
The first thing I'm going to throw down is Death Stranding. I literally just want to see more Death Stranding. And I know that they're going to do gameplay and stuff. We got the release date for November the 8th. I just want to see more of it. I want to see it being played.
Do you think we're going to see more of it?
I hope so.
After an 8-minute trailer, I think they're just going to go, okay, it's coming out November 8th. That would be a thing
that they could totally do, but I think because the trailer was so story heavy and was just so heavy on the like the random messaging and the hints of stuff and the metaphors and whatever, you can check me and Jules' video out for a full explainer of just what the hell was going on in that trailer. That leaves it open to do a full gameplay demo and be like, here's 10 minutes of actual gameplay. Here's what you actually need to do. Because the stuff that they've shown so far is like you have survival elements when you're on land and then you get killed and you get dragged down into a hellscape and then you do more third person shooting, and I just want to see more of that stuff.
Just here for Mads.
I'm here for Mads. I want to see.
I said to you, Scott, as blasphemous as I've never played a Kojima game. But
you're just a scoundrel, Richard.
I'm kind of intrigued by Death Stranding just because it looks so ridiculous. I do think when I watched the trailer, I watched it through the first time, I thought, God, this looks really obnoxious.
Oh, hell yeah.
God, but obviously, I know that's what
Kojima does.
That's what he does. So, as an entry point to come into a new, completely new franchise with that Kojima, I wouldn't say jank, that sort of.
Signature style.
It's like frivolity behind it. Like,
it's very impenetrable. I mean, it's not impenetrable because the metaphor is very on the nose, you know, the whole...
But that's what I mean. Like, jumping into Metal Gear just sounds like such a task. It's like jumping into Kingdom Hearts. But like, I'm intrigued by Death Stranding. And like I said, I need to push my boundaries out this year.
I would totally
say
that you can just leap into a Metal Gear, especially the first one on PS1 is still incredible to just pick up and play. Death Stranding is absolutely him getting full creative control and a ridiculous budget. And it's just unrestrained artistic freedom, which I love. Good to see you. And what is your first pick, sir?
Ghost Recon.
Nice
points, because I'm like, again, kind of going off from one military fiction to the other. Tom Clancy inspired that first Modern Warfare game, you know, in a great many ways. You know, you have very kind of cliched tropes about military fiction. Ghost Recon might have some Ubisoft syndrome problems coming up ahead, because obviously, basically, you're going to this island to take down this ex-soldier who has taken control of evil Elon Musk's drones.
So it's Tom Clancy's Just Cause, then, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
going to an island to take down a dictator. That's just all over.
For all of the problems that Wildlands had, like the story was awful, the voice acting was appalling, the gameplay, the driving was so bad. But actually, playing that game with friends, it gave me that tactical need that I want from a shooter game. Like, I felt rewarded when you planned a move and then you executed it perfectly as a team. That's what I really wanted. And it looks as though Breakpoint is leaning more on those survival elements, more immersion. You know, each time you get hit, it actually matters. You have to bandage yourself up. There's a survival element at play. And I like how if you play it by yourself, you are on your own. But if you have you don't have any AI teammates, so that means no bad banter. And on the upside as well, it means that if you just want to play with you and your friend, make it like almost like the old Splinter Cell campaigns. You could just do it as a two-man thing and just go that way. And the gameplay looked really good. I was really blown away by that first demo.
My whole thing with that is like the shooting is so solid. I've never requested a battle royale mode in something, but I was like, come on, the engine is so perfect for it, and everything plays really well and tactfully and everything. I'm talking about Wildlands, but I really wish that they'd given, because they eventually did a multiplayer mode, but it's like battle royale would fit so nicely. And then for the new one, if they've tightened the physics up and just make it a nice weighty third-person shooter. I know that's what the Division's trying to be, but there's way more options for you in Ghost Recon, you know, the different roles and tactical roles and camouflage and everything. What do you think of Ghost Recon, Rich?
I've not played Ghost Recon, but
you're missing out,
I've been, honestly, it's on my Steam wish list, and I've got a sale coming up, so I'm kind of tempted when that goes out. But like, I think with the Siege approach of like, let's refine everything, let's give it this ridiculous longevity. I mean, even looking up on Wildlands, the last DLC came out for it in what, March?
It was just actually support stuff really recently.
And if they can continue that, if they can make kind of like how Siege has become, like, I don't know when we might see another Rainbow Six game. I'm assuming probably not for a long time, because Siege is doing so well. The Breakpoint could be that new, could be the third person open world Siege clone, and just do its own thing and continue to be supported. And honestly, I know that obviously it suffers from Ubisoft game syndrome, but with a game of a service like that, that's going to be like, here's a game as a service, and this is what it's going to be for the next X number of years. Yeah. It's not like, here's a games as a service Assassin's Creed game, you'll have another one in 2 years' time.
Because all I want from Ghost Recon is the ability to play with my friends and have be given different scenarios, and you get to basically make your own way to win. And that's why Advanced Warfighter was so fun, because they had a limitless array of co-op like missions that you could do with your friends. You could do them in different ways. Mm. And I want that from a Ghost Recon game. I want to be able to tackle all these different scenarios in a way that makes me feel like an arty-farty kind of like... You play Call of Duty and I'm playing Ghost Recon.
I think there's a niche to be filled for like a very militaristic, weighty, like, you know, just really good tactile third person shooter. And it's like, for me, The Division wasn't that. So I'm game to see what else they've got to show. Rich, what's your first one, sir?
Doom Eternal.
Yes! We don't know if that's coming out this year, do we?
Baby, I have got a good feeling that it's coming out this year.
Is that big sword he's got?
Sorry?
Is that big sword that he's got? He's got a nice big sword.
He's got a big old glowy sword.
Big old
hell lightsaber. Bethesda have been pushing Doom Eternal a lot this year. QuakeCon is coming up, so much so that they're doing a mini QuakeCon in London with Doom Eternal playable there. So I'm game.
Well, it sounds like it's pretty far along.
It's pretty far along, but also one of the things that people have been sending me consistently over the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. Do you remember last year in Los Angeles, Bethesda had a big mural painted of the three Vault Boys together to reveal Fallout 76? That same mural has been used again to paint on Doom.
Yeah.
I know it's a weird thing to say, oh, that was painted on there and it was released that year. Doom Eternal's been painted there as well. Doom Eternal is the flagship game at Bethesda's E3 conference, and they're not going to show a big old flagship game and then go, oh yeah.
I was going to say, because there's not a strong chance we'll see Elder Scrolls this year.
No, apparently they're not showing it at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, Bethesda really need a win as well.
And Doom Eternal, at the minute, in their climate, the biggest win they can get that isn't going to be rushing Elder Scrolls 6 out the door or Starfield out the door is Doom Eternal.
Yeah, I think something like that.
My God, does that game look amazing.
I think you can hold that up, and it's just, I mean, that was the whole thing with the original one, was just like the frame rate was so fluid and it just played so well.
Everything about that game is just perfect.
Yeah.
And honestly, one of the things I'm most excited for about this game, not only is the lovely, gory, brilliant shooting and everything being wonderful, jumping about the place, we get a whole new Mick Gordon.
I was just going to say,
and that is just, that is one of the best things about it. Like, honestly, getting excited about a new game because we're getting another soundtrack is a weird thing, but
it's pretty good though.
My God, it works.
I want to see what fat riffs that man has come up with in the last like 2 years or 3 years.
Give me Rip and Tear 2.
Rip and continue to tear. The next thing I've got down is just there's just a Microsoft presentation. I just want to see what they do. The whole thing is that they're ostensibly going to be showing like two new Xboxes, the one that's for everybody and the one that's the premium edition or whatever. So I'm kind of curious just what the consoles look like. I always like new hardware. But also, they have to supplant that with exclusives because they just completely dropped the ball this generation. So, like, you know, they acquired Obsidian and In Exile. And we have rumors like George R. R. Martin's working alongside From Software doing whatever their game is. But the thing that goes alongside that is that because Sekiro was demoed on a Microsoft stage, that their new game would then be demoed on this new stage. There's also the rumors going around, well, we kind of wrote them up as rumors, but the idea, the wish fulfillment, that potentially Bungie might announce their new game on a Microsoft stage, because that would look fantastic too.
It would make sense, because at the end of the day, Microsoft's is the only stage that isn't tied to a particular publisher except the PC gaming show, but that's normally reserved for PC exclusive games. So yeah, Microsoft's conference is probably the most anticipated, because going into last year's E3, I think all of our expectations of Microsoft weren't very high.
No.
They blew it away last year.
It's just like
they have got the, because Sony aren't there, they've got the biggest stage for all of these publishers to come to show off their new game. So that's really exciting.
Plus Halo Infinite.
I was going to say, I've got Halo Infinite down. I've got Fable, which we know is coming from Playground, like the Forza devs and stuff. It's like they have these old school properties that they can just tick the box on. They can be like, here's some more Gears 5. And that's all fine, but we need new stuff too.
Yes.
They need things for the future. I just, like I said, I think that they had a disastrous generation, all things accounted for. And I'm just, people want to love, I think there's enough there that people would tap back into to love Xbox
They're working
Xbox
their
again.
Way back out. Definitely, especially, I mean, again, even on the PC side, like they've announced the Master Chief Collection for PC, which I'm really excited for. And they've also only the other day revealed that the Game Pass is coming to PC properly.
I think that'll get announced for Switch as well.
That's potentially for Switch as well. And that's really exciting for Microsoft to announce. So they've got a very, very good presentation this year, not only on the potential games that's coming, but also, as you said, the consoles, the services. There's a lot coming from them.
They need to turn heads and they need to make it work. Like, it's their show to lose. So I'm just, I like that. Like, in like a Super Bowl style sense, I'm like, I want to see.
I do
how
like
they
how they're firing kind of the first shots across the bow for the next generation. Like, I was Xbox up until PlayStation 4.
Right.
Absolutely. So I'm interested to see where
especially
they could go.
Especially since when they did, because they announced first last time as well, and they were absolutely torn to shreds by Sony. They don't have that this year, so they have the stage to do not whatever they like. Because I think I'm hoping they've learned from their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But they, like I said, they've got the biggest platform.
They
right
have
now. Unless Sony just trying to go, oh, here's a state of play of all things with the new consoles in it, which would be a bit disappointing, if I'm honest.
If they pip them to the post with that, it'll be hilarious. Yep. You, what's your next thing?
Marvel's Avengers.
Yes, good.
After what feels like 84 years waiting for that, between the first trailer coming out and them basically posting a tweet, an announcement like yesterday that
2 days ago
that they're going to show it off at Square Enix's live stream on June 10th, I think it is.
There is some information about this looking like it's going to be a squad based thing. You play as four different players.
I was going to say, currently my main worry with this game is that it's going to be Destiny but superheroes. And like they've talked about it being a continuous single player. There's talk about, you know, customization. My big fear in this is, if you say you just want to play an Avengers game, and my initial worry was that it was basically going to be another Ultimate Alliance and we were going to have an isometric game when we've already got one coming out. But now my main worry is, you know, we have this almost like the gear system from Injustice 2 was great. I loved kind of outfitting my characters in unique ways and finding different like Batman that looked different. I could see them doing a similar thing with the Avengers and have a great roster of characters, but then you have raids, and the press release is like a world constantly under threat, and obviously, you know, that's the Marvel universe, it is always under threat, but at the same time they could easily spin that into a, you are the Avengers and you are just reacting to different threats that happen all the time, and you've got to get, and then if you're Captain America and you do this raid at a given time against the Red Skull and you get a glowy frisbee something like that, and I'm not really down for that. I want something that's
the more meaty narrative rather than just a
like Spider-Man
missions. Spider-Man PS4, but in with Avengers, and it either switches out characters based on the story, like whatever mission you're doing. Like, first you start out as Iron Man, then you'll do a Cap mission, then you'll do a Captain Marvel mission, etc., etc.
But
that would be great.
I love the co-op element. I desperately want a co-op superhero game. I think that's fantastic that that's confirmed. My only worry is that it could be
a games as a service loop.
Yes.
As someone who plays, because after Endgame, I was in such a Marvel mood, so I reinstalled Spidey and I ended up downloading the most played apps on Android because I was like, I just want a Marvel fix. All of them are the free-to-play ones with the dailies and the grinds and the raids and everything. I get that because it's free-to-play.
Strike Force,
Contest of Champions. There's a whole bunch of them. But because it's Square Enix on publishing duties, I wouldn't put it past them to go, like, we have the biggest property in the world right now. Let's monetize the ever-loving F out of it. So, that kind of has me worried a little bit as well. Especially because, you know, even something like the Iron Man tie-in movie games, at least scratch the edge a little bit of being able to fly around as Iron Man. Not very well. But like how you could reroute his power to different parts of his suit. But it's just so overdue. Like, why isn't there a great Iron Man game? Why isn't there a great Thor game, etc.?
We've got Iron Man VR coming, mate.
As does, I don't know.
To be fair, the VR, that looks great.
Yeah.
That does legitimately look great. I've heard good things. Yeah. Avengers, please be good.
Rich, what's your next one?
Harry Potter Magic Awakened.
Ooh!
One of the biggest, probably unconfirmed things potentially arriving at E3.
Whose stage do you think it'll be on?
Microsoft.
Yeah.
It can't be anywhere else.
True.
Unless Warner Brothers as what everyone's been doing, like, in the last couple of days, just revealing something now.
I was just seeing trailers alongside
stuff,
doing, like,
a gameplay thing, a bigger thing at E3. But it'll be Microsoft, if anyone.
The million-dollar question with this, though, Rich, though, because it's set in the 19th century,
set in
isn't
the late 19th century.
Are we going to see the wizards clean up then soiling themselves, as J.K. Rowling prophesied the other month.
You know what? There's actually four new e-books coming under the subtitle History of Magic that J.K. Rowling has written for Pottermore.
Has she actually written them?
Oh dear, this could introduce new bits of lore that nobody wants to know. I mean, I'm kind of excited to see where it goes. Like, in terms of gameplay, the idea of being a student, choosing your alliance, whether you're good, whether you're bad, going to lessons, and stuff like that. I don't obviously plot-wise, we don't really know where else it's going to go. We just know we're going to be a fifth-year student, late entry in Hogwarts, overseen by Professor Eleazar Fig and all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That sounds really exciting, but lore-wise, I am kind of concerned because with the recent Wizarding World developments, be it these new books, however they may go, with all the J.K. Rowling going, look, this character's gay now. Mm-hmm. And wizards poo themselves, because of course they do. And also the absolute catastrophic, very, you know, a solid fart that was Crimes of Grindelwald. I'm not
solid.
I wanted to say, like, poop.
No, you can't on the YouTube. You can't.
Podcast.
Solid fart is way better, though.
A solid fart that is Crimes of Grindelwald. Fair. The canon and lore kind of side, I am concerned about, because I am worried that, I mean, there's a huge twist at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald that completely throws the entire canon of Potter completely all over the place, and I'm hoping to God it's not true.
I hope they
have to try and wind it back, but I'm worried that that's going to happen again in Magic Awakening. There's going to be some massive thing, like, for example, you're at the school and Dumbledore's there as a young teacher, which he might be at this point, maybe.
Oh, Dumbledore, the wild uni years.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, Dumbledore was actually a Slytherin, and he was there, like, slapping bitches and stabbing wizards, and it's
No.
It does make me wonder, like, I hope that they have JK on hand as a consultant.
She always has her finger in that pie, and as much as the idea of, like, the law's not going to be taken away from the writer, you think that's a great idea, but at the bit's JK Rowling at this point in time, and she's completely off her rocker.
Dumbledore doesn't pull up in a carriage and goes, come on nerds, we're going wizarding, and then just
flies off in a little blue car.
In terms of a game, I am super super duper duper stoked for this, but yeah, as a fan and the current state of the canon of the Wizarding World, I am cautiously optimistic.
I forget which movie tie-in had you just free-roaming around Hogwarts.
I think it was Order of the Phoenix was the first one. I mean, I need Amy here. She knows these games back to front.
Still, that's a really
good
idea.
I think
it was
Order of the Phoenix gave you an entire Hogwarts to explore, and that is incredible. Yeah. Again, on potentially next-gen, don't know when exactly, but, like, even just games now. Imagine walking around Hogwarts with, like, the art style and the sort of clarity of, like, God of War.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Mm.
Like, I'm not a Harry Potter fan, but I love, like, the idea of it. It's so appealing.
A licensed title of that kind of scale. Mm-hmm. You don't see it very often.
Another thing that's so long overdue as well.
It's so long overdue.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The next one I've got down is Final Fantasy VII's remake. Now, the rumors are flying around for this that they're going to be showing a demo, and apparently we're going to be getting a playable demo straight after that. Ooh. So that they'll show whatever the latest stuff that they've done is, and then they'll go. And there's also something available on the PlayStation Plus store, kind of what happened with PT, which I'll do a little backflip for many times if that's the case.
We had the State of Play a couple of weeks ago that ended with a Final Fantasy VII thing, which I don't think anyone was expecting, because the expectations for the State of Plays are so very low.
Well, they keep setting dates and then missing them.
Yeah, they said more in June at the end of the thing, so we're obviously getting some kind of output from Sony at E3 in some description, because it's the days of play.
Well, I think they'll just release something alongside
over
it,
the course of E3, so I'm guessing they might do like a State of Play, or they'll do an E3 State of Play that people can see as being something a little more refined and not just reserved for the chuff that's coming out for the PlayStation.
As two people who haven't played Final Fantasy VII, what do you guys think?
I
Do you want some cloud?
No,
I don't care. He's got a gun on his arm.
The thing is, like, the thing that always put me off about Final Fantasy was the weird, like, kind of lore. Okay. I don't really care for it, and also the turn-based combat. I know that's gone with this one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing with me as well as turn-based.
If I can hop into that world in gameplay that I find organic and doesn't kind of break the pace of the story. Mm-hmm. I might be able to get into it. That might be my thing. And that's the thing. I know a lot of people are upset that it's not turn-based, but I guess the main thing to consider is maybe this game isn't for old fans. It's for actually getting to new people into the lore.
Yeah. I think, I hope that it does that for both. I hope that it... Because the story itself, like, there's a whole bunch of translation issues with the original one that they'll hopefully iron out with this one. But the core message at the heart of Final Fantasy VII is this great, environmentally friendly message about the planet and the sanctity of the planet.
Isn't it depressing that was 20 years ago?
Yeah, a little bit. And it's like, but that still belongs today more than ever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you can kind of hit that in a way that the original, you had to go digging a little bit for that original one, even though they have literal terms like the planets die in cloud and whatever. So there's a way to sort of do it. But yeah, what I hope they show off is, well, one, I hope we get a release date. And two, I hope they confirm the vast majority of the leaks that are going around at the minute. Because apparently it's been split into two, that even though there was going to be episodic, apparently it's in two halves. So I hope they say something about the first half. Ewan, what is your third thing?
Ghost of Tsushima.
Ooh, that's about time. We saw
yeah, because we got gameplay of it last year as well, and it looks so good. Love I that. Want this to be like Red Dead, but with samurai. Yep. Like, it just, everything about this, I think it's been my most anticipated PS4 exclusive for a while.
Ooh.
Like, I just, everything about it, if they can get the history right, if they can get the gameplay right, if they can get all this, I just want to learn more. We've been given two brief glimpses of it so far, and everything about it has just been... Yep.
It kind of looks a bit like Sekiro if it was more grounded, like less demons. It's way more realistic. Yeah. And like, I like the idea of a really specific tactile combat system.
And like it basically, if it can be Red Dead, but for feudal Japan, that sounds amazing. Because I think it's dealing with the Mongol invasion and stuff. So if they can get the history right, because I love history, if they can do that, if they can get the gameplay feeling good, I would love to. I just want to see more. I want to know a release date as well.
I think we're two conferences down to be appearing, and surely by now it will be about time.
I don't know. There are more games coming out this year now that I'm worried about could like end up making the end of year feel quite congested.
Mm. Yeah.
Initially, I was like, I want this to come out this year, but maybe early 2020 would be a little bit better.
One thing that fascinates me is, because obviously we've mentioned a couple of Sony things and we stayed away from them for the most part, but like the idea is obviously E3 season is this massive time when everyone's searching E3 reveals and game announcements and whatever.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, if you're Sony, do you just release trailers online during that period? Because I think you still can, and I think that's what they'll experiment with.
That's probably why all of these big reveals that we've had coming up over the last couple of days, like the Death Stranding trailer, like the announcement of Ghostbusters Remastered, stuff like Ewan's favourite game. Like, they can do that because, the hype is real, they can just do it. That's probably why Nintendo saw the potential of just doing a digital direct thing and just went, we'll do that. It saves us a hell of a lot of money, and it's worked really, really well.
We are drastically running out of time. Rich, what is your fourth thing, please?
Very quickly, we're going back to Bethesda because I remember earlier, either this year or last year, I think it was this year, there was a listing on Amazon under Bethesda's name with a good old film countdown timer thing, which everyone looks at and goes, oh, that looks like Fallout. So people are thinking we might see a Fallout remaster or another Fallout game.
Oh, God, that was
more of a Fallout remaster. Fallout 3 remastered.
Kind of like Skyrim. Maybe.
Kind of like a special edition. And I know that that's just Bethesda retreading the same ground again, like they have with Skyrim for the past 8 years.
There was a New Vegas remaster rumored a while back. It tends to be nearly every
E3. I think Obsidian poo-pooed that very quickly.
Yeah, they did. But it's
I would have loved a New Vegas remaster.
If I could play Fallout 3, because I did say on the Bethesda podcast, you should go and listen to.
You should.
I hadn't played Fallout 3 and I played a bit of New Vegas, but because of the mechanics, it just doesn't play as well for me like Fallout 4 does. But if I got Fallout 3 to play like the gunplay and the combat of Fallout 4, 1,000,000% down.
They need to fill, even if they're doing a really short conference, last time it was 35 minutes long, even if they're filling half an hour, like, it's enough room to be like, by the way, we're doing this.
At the end of the day, they don't have a huge amount that we know that's actually coming, because apparently they're not hearing about Elder Scrolls 6, we're not hearing about Starfield, we've got Doom, and that's kind of it. And Wolfenstein Youngblood, but that'll be out by the time
But even then, like, their first party stuff, they haven't got anything. They're holding up Doom, but that's just something they're publishing.
Something is coming at E3, and people are thinking it might be another Fallout game, and to be honest, it would make sense because they're like, oh yeah, Fallout 76. That's the side. Here's a Fallout game you all know and love. It's kind of like in the same way that Activision have gone, oh, let's do Modern Warfare again.
They're
just going to go, okay, let's make people a bit more happy and just give them Fallout 3 remaster. We'll give them that to tide them over for the next couple of years after we get Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6 out of the way, and then we'll get Fallout
If you put 5. Fallout on Switch, that's
Fallout
it.
Fallout 4 on Switch.
Done.
Absolutely.
I was going to say three in New Vegas.
I mean,
but,
I would say four. I'd love four on Switch. I really want to play through it again and just have it.
If they can make Mortal Kombat on the Switch-ish, they can probably make
Skyrim
well.
On the Switch. They can make Fallout.
Yeah, exactly. My number four is just a very quick one, which is Onimusha 5. The Onimusha series hasn't been around for so long, and then Capcom were like, by the way, we're remastering the original on Switch. And people like me went, bah! Because does that mean that you're caring about Onimusha again? Because for the longest time, I'm a huge fan of Onimusha, which came out of a whole bunch of experimenting times back in the early 2000s when Capcom were like, okay, what can we do with the Resident Evil engine? And they did Devil May Cry, and Resident Evil 4 went off in a different direction. And then we got Onimusha as well, which was at the time this isometric, you know, kind of horror slash with action game. And I still totally recommend the original if you grab it on Switch as well. It's quite short, but, you know, it's had this whole like kind of Sekiro style, like demonic Japanese, kind of feudal Japan sort of look. And it just played so well. And they went so high with that franchise. Like Onimusha 3 had Jean Reno. I forget what you call the other dude who was in that. But that franchise used to really mean something to Capcom. And I just hope that the remaster means something.
Well, I mean, Capcom are obviously doing very well for themselves at the moment, especially with the remaster. So doing another big series would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, they also, I forget the name of the guy who was asked, but one of their CEOs was asked about the future of Onimusha. And he just said, we're always exploring potential avenues or something like that. Which is a generic response.
No.
But I'll take that as a potential. So just give me a logo. Give me anything. Give me Samanosuke walking around. Just give me anything at all. I think there's certain people on this earth listening to this podcast that are younger than Onimusha, but I don't care. I want more Onimusha. But yes, Ewan, what is your final one? Your number four, please.
Yeah. I was going to do the Splinter Cell night vision goggles.
Oh, God.
Splinter Cell with big bad Michael Ironside back in the lead role, or Sam Fisher. I mean, I'm so tired. I just want to.
It's not here.
It's been.
When was Blacklist 2013?
2013. So, and like that was arguably one that's up there with Chaos Theory.
That's right next to
like,
it. For
it's,
me, yeah.
it's a fantastic stealth action game, and the fact that after we had that tease in Wildlands, they got Ironside back to reprise the role. And, you know, he was going on the record talking about, like, all his health troubles afterwards. I think it would be so good if he came back to Splinter Cell in a proper, fully-fledged action title or stealth title. That's just like, you know, it's everything that Blacklist was. Yep. Just give us more Blacklist, because there are so many story threads of that game left off as well. And, you know, it really does frustrate me that we've had, like, in the space of Blacklist coming out, we've had two Watch Dogs games and two Division games.
Who for?
And, like, Splinter Cell is literally one of UB's biggest flagship franchises, and the fact that it's not been around for this period of time is a joke.
Well, you might be in luck, because Ubisoft's conference is already starting to sort of plan out as to what we're going to get. We're going to get a big dancing panda to announce Just Dance 2020 at the beginning.
Good.
Hells yeah, looking forward to that.
Yes.
but we've already heard about Ghost Recon Breakpoint. Beyond Good and Evil 2 won't be there. It's been confirmed. It's not appearing at E3.
Well, that's what they want you to
stab me in the heart.
I'll get Matey from What's It from Trials to come out and knock down some tables again.
Yeah.
That didn't make me want to shoot myself when that happened. But there is definitely a big old glaring hole in Ubisoft's conference right now. We might see some more Starlink. We might see another Mario Rabbids game. We might see them team up with Nintendo Assassin's Creed, yeah, maybe.
Just knock the lights out.
I think Splinter Cell would work. Yeah,
knock the lights out. Do the noise.
Literally, everything's black. And
all you need. Boing. Yeah, and the three lights on the screen. That's all you need.
Just do that, and then that's where the conference ends.
Yeah.
That's all people need. Yeah. In the same way that when they said, we're working on The Elder Scrolls 6, here's the logo, bye. And that's all they needed to do.
I just need to know that it's coming. And it's like, that thing with Michael Ironside when he was on the GameSpot interview, and they were like, oh, you're doing this DLC, does that point to something else? And he was like, well, I can't say. And it's just like, maybe. And I talk like Michael Ironside. And so like that was his thing, and it's like, well, that seems like something else, you know, more irons in the fire, and it's Ironside's in the fire. And it's just like, at this stage, it's been rumored and talked about, and you know, there's always something every year where it's okay, this year, maybe. And it's like, just come on. Anyway, Rich, what's your fourth one, please?
I'm going to channel my long, luscious red hair and say Cyberpunk 2077.
I'm just not laying claim to Cyberpunk 2077. I will also claim this.
I am also excited for it as well. I'm very much looking forward to jumping into a CD Projekt game because I do own The Witcher 3, but I have not played it.
Oh, play it, Rich!
But the idea of a big old first-person RPG, that makes me excited. Like, after playing Fallout 4, that's why I'm excited for Outer Worlds as well, even though Epic Store moving on. Like, Cyberpunk just looks incredible.
They have said that they're going to be showing new gameplay sequences. That like, because they had that whole demo at last E3 that only the press got to see initially, and then it was a Twitch stream. And then this thing, they said that they are demoing it. They have new gameplay to show off. But that's all we've got.
I'd like to see more combat, because there wasn't a huge amount of combat showing off. It was more interacting with the world than that 48 minutes of gameplay we got. But I think, do you know what? if we end E3 this year with release dates for the big three, which are Death Stranding, Last of Us, and Cyberpunk, that would be incredible.
I think Last of Us, like, I don't think Sony will do anything for Last of Us, but with Death Stranding somehow doing the impossible and coming out in November, then maybe Cyberpunk.
I think Cyberpunk will be another big, you know, in the same way, like, last year we had really big releases all coming up together at that little bunch of time. I think adding Cyberpunk to the list, yeah, it's going to be Cyberpunk, a very busy end of the year, but I'm totally down for getting Cyberpunk.
Yeah,
that was early next year.
That was initially mentioned back in 2013. So CD Projekt have been bouncing around the idea of Cyberpunk for so long that they must have done most of the bulk of development on PS4 hardware, even if they got the PS5 test kits early. Yeah. Like, you know, the PS5, the whole thing with that is that it'll be backwards compatible and whatever.
I think we know it's going to be one of those continuing over games. But then again, if the PS5 is backwards compatible as it has been supposedly is, they wouldn't need to release it.
That's what I'm thinking, though. I think primarily
it's PS4. Maybe you can download an assets pack if you're playing on PS5 to make it even nicer, like a HD texture pack.
I think those things point to it coming down for that. Maybe later this year, or at least before the PS5.
I want to see more Cyberpunk. I'm happy to just look to see more, but I would also like a release date.
Yeah,
even
same.
If it is like February next year, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I just want to know when to expect it.
Just give me some vague window.
Yeah.
And the last thing I've got down is the Switch getting full backwards compatibility with the SNES, N64, and Game Boy Advance games.
Game Boy Advance.
Yes, because
that's
those were
awesome.
I know, because those things were all on the Wii U. They used to have the whole virtual console set up and you can just go on there, play Super Mario 64, play Minish Cap, Zelda Minish Cap, do whatever you want. All those things were available and then they just got rid of them for the Switch and I don't know why. I think the only reason that they did
monetization.
But they can't monetize what's not there. Like, there's nothing.
Well,
I don't know why
they can roll out slowly with it. Well, the online pass, which is what they've done with the
that's
AS
what I think.
Games,
so
I've already bought off.
Yeah, you do. So they have the monthly Nintendo Switch online pass where you pay whatever fee it is, but you only get NES games. Mm-hmm. And genuinely, 99% of them are terrible. Like, they're just too old. Like you can go back to Super Mario, you can go back to Kirby, but you're not going back to
5 minutes. You get the nostalgia kick. Yeah, like, oh, this is bad.
And it's just like, this service is just begging. Like, one monthly fee for access to Nintendo's archives is the most valuable thing in gaming history, and it's stupid that they're not doing it.
Why restrict something that so many people would want and put it on the platform and leave it on the platform that nobody bought?
Yeah,
where
exactly.
It's been such a success. Like, if they turned around and said, hey, you can, like, here's every game you could ever possibly get for like a fiver a pop, like, they'd make a killing.
They could charge like 20, 30, whatever. I don't care.
I mean,
if you have access to that, then
incredible.
Just, but, yeah, give me something that lets me play.
Give me Mario Kart Double Dash on the Switch.
Yeah, give me everything. You and sir, what's your final one?
I gotta get it in. Batman Arkham.
Oh God! Yeah, that's another overdue thing.
He thought I wasn't gonna say it. I didn't say it anyway. Just give me one of those ones. Just tell me what you're doing right now. Tell me, because I want to know. I'm going a little bit insane thinking about.
Oh, Rocksteady's still alive.
I mean, Rocksteady are, but Warner Brothers they are as well. But yeah. they're working on two different things.
They're working on Magic Awakening, mate. Sorry.
Oh, I just give me a sequel to Arkham Origins. I'm the Origins truther here, because like Arkham Origins, like, it's like the best. It's the best entry in the Arkham series. Like, people are there talking about like Arkham Knight and like Arkham Cities and your Arkham Asylums. I like them all except Knight, but Origins is incredible, and like, I want to see that story. And I've been so excited since Pat Redding came on board to that project, because he helmed. He was the creative director on Splinter Cell Blacklist, I'm fairly certain. Mm-hmm. And a Batman game that leans into those stealth elements. We have the Court of Owls kind of basically confirmed at this point.
Yep.
It's been in production for so long, and after years spent kind of almost in the wilderness, I just want Montreal to have a win. You know
it
what
just
I mean?
Seems
like,
so
they,
obvious.
They had like the Suicide Squad game get cancelled, which was set up after Origins. They've had different things that seem to have like been started and stopped. I just want them to actually have a new Batman game in the limelight, because
I think there'll be a fascinating Kotaku expose about the reality of that development, because I think I have to imagine that Warner Brothers have pivoted the design of those games and cancelled things alongside the DC films not doing very well. Mm-hmm. Hence why the Suicide Squad game was like all systems ahead with this, and then that just got canned. And I have to imagine that I think there'll be a lot of publisher oversight, a lot of corporate whims dictating which projects got canned and severed and whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is so stupidly overdue. Arkham Knight was 2015.
The thing is like, we had this DC game universe get set up right from the start with Asylum. They had Easter eggs for the Justice League there.
Yep.
Arkham City, Arkham Knight, and Origins all had references to the outer DC universe. Mm-hmm. Marvel's The Avengers could be connected to Marvel's Spider-Man, and Marvel literally could have undercut, like literally cut through what DC had been trying to do for the past 10 years in the space of two, which is
that's completely
ridiculous.
Because like, obviously DC have been playing catch up to Marvel in the film industry, and like you said, if they're really ahead on the games, just do it.
Yeah.
Come on,
it just seems really weird.
Just because the film didn't do very well, it may affect sales of a game based on the same like source material. But in the same way that like the new Batman, like when what's his face took over Batman from
Oh, Matt Reeves.
What's he called? Why is his left name?
Jeff.
Left me?
John.
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck. There you go. Took over Batman and the characters. Everyone sort of went, oh, I'm not really interested anymore. And yet the Batman games continue to sell. It's like they are kind of seen as two separate things as long as you don't make the games part of the actual worlds of DC.
That's the kind of thing that...
If they make it separate, then they can just go, look, this is something completely different. Just go and play that. Like, this is... If you want that... You want the MCU sort of itch, but for DC, go play the games.
Yeah. That sort of like throw the baby out with the bathwater mentality is very publisher corporate orientated. Whereas like as consumers of all this media, the comics, the comic fandom can be separate to the games, can be separate to the films. You know, there's obviously a way to pass those things out. So yeah, I think something's in the works, but we'll have to wait and see. Good, Sir Rich, what is your final one?
Finally, a weird announcement for E3 2019, and that is that these Simpsons writers and producers are doing a panel.
Yeah.
Now, E3 is very much a video game conference. It's not turned into Comic-Con that's just everything.
Right.
They are very much just video games. And we haven't had a like a platform, if you get what I mean, video game for The Simpsons since The Simpsons game, which was like 2007, 2008 when the film came out.
A while ago, yeah.
So 12 years ago. And that's ridiculous. And because all we had is Tapped Out, which is a microtransaction riddle, rubbish, terrible thing, which I don't ever want to touch. But literally right now, I'm playing through Simpsons Hit and Run again. So it's like, this is where they can jump back into the video game industry. Yeah. But the problem with that is they need to focus on the golden era and leave it at that. Like playing through Hit and Run again, all the references, all this sort of thing. It's like, this is when, this is the Simpsons everyone knows.
Yeah.
They need to make sure they keep it within that. If they did like Hit and Run 2, which took place X number of years after the first one, and everything in the game was based off referencing the latter series.
The ones
like
series no one watched.
20, like, I'll get some of the references, but not everyone will. And even now the show is turned into just referencing itself from the golden era. So they are obviously aware that that's when people cared. So even if it's not a brand new game, it could just be Simpsons Hit and Run Remastered. Or the Simpsons collection of a bunch of different games together. Or,
Simpsons Wrestling
Remastered. Or like remastered. Or I say not even fully remastered. I would take Hit and Run in its old like era, like
just put it on the PS4,
just put it out at 1080p 60, maybe upgrade the textures a little bit, keep the voice lines, keep the sort of, I mean, the it plays really well.
It's pretty solid.
Like, it's like, just keep that, just release it on the PS4 PS5. I will buy it.
How amazing would it be if they got the Donut team involved to do the remaster and they brought across all the additional content that they've been working on
it
for
would
PC
make sense
all
the to do called?
No, the Donut team are this own independent group that have been basically making loads of mods and additional content for Hit and Run. So they've like given the sedan like its like roof and stuff, and they've done loads of different missions based on different episodes and stuff.
Good stuff.
That would be amazing if they managed to get them involved, because I know the people, is it Radical Entertainment who did Hit and Run?
Yeah.
I know they've been very vocally supportive of what they've been doing, so maybe?
It could, maybe the Simpsons are going, oh, we need to be relevant again. Quick, let's do a game. And I'm down for it if we get another Simpsons game in the vein of Hit and Run. And even in the Simpsons game, I really enjoyed
it. Was solid. Like, that was back when EA puts like enough of a, like a movie sized budget behind a game, like,
and
the whole
still let them
then
have the same approach to, you can slag us off as much as you like, which they did. I'm down for that if that's a thing.
Something
if,
like
if it's just, if it's just a panel to talk about The Simpsons as a show, then it's obviously shown that E3 are starting to think, oh god, we're starting to lose out on people, we need to get new people in, so let's open the floor a bit to away from games, which would be disappointing.
I think if they were going to do, like, is The Simpsons that much of a get in that regard? Like, I think they would do a Rick and Morty panel if they were going to do that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, but I mean, something like Hit and Run, I think, has a nice little cult following. You always see it gift and memed and talked about, and everyone has this really positive reverence for it. So if they're going
to
do any one remaster from the olden
age
of the games, yeah, I would take that. For now though, these have been our roundup of random leaks and things for E3 2019. Let us know your favorites down in the comments below, or come find us on social media if you're listening on the audio side. And for now though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Parson.
Goodbye.
And Rich Hudson.
Thank you for listening or watching.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
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 Radical. Ironside.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.